Hello everyone, welcome back. It is the evening of January 2nd, 2014. Happy New Year. I hope things are well in your part of the world. We're getting close to setting some records in cold here. Over Christmas, certain parts of Canada were without electricity. There were hundreds of thousands of people that had no power over Christmas. And further east in the Maritimes, things seem to be getting even worse as the winter goes on. I'm always amazed that human beings can live in this kind of an environment. And not only live, actually thrive to some degree. I've had lots of people write in this month with comments and questions. So thank you to those who have written in. Thanks to those who have purchased Boudescence through the website. Thanks to those who have sent in donations. And as always, thanks to Marcus Fellows for establishing this website in the first place and for posting these responses each month. Just a reminder that if you're listening to this response and you're having any difficulty relating to what it is I'm saying and you want to consider this in its broadest possible way, you could perhaps check out the two main talks on the website. If you go to the Listen Dropbox and find the Talks heading, you will find two main talks. One is titled Acknowledging the Moment, and the other is titled An Overview of Spiritual Awakening. And those will allow you to consider, in the broadest terms, what it is I'm offering on this website. So, having mentioned that, we'll get down to what's come in this month. Actually, before I get down to what's been sent in, somebody this month made the comment that what I'm saying leaves no room for people in therapy. And this person was dismissing what it was that I was saying because he had the impression that it left no room for people that had an interest in therapy. And I'm not sure where people get these strange ideas, because all I've ever really said is that everyone is the natural expression of existence and everyone is the valid expression of existence. A non-dual perspective is not telling anybody what kind of human being they're supposed to be. It's simply saying that whatever you are, whatever you seem to be doing, is not your personal doing. It's the expression of something totally mysterious, something that can't be explained ultimately in any way whatsoever. But that, whatever that is presenting itself automatically. And everyone, every apparent person, is the natural expression of that. Every apparent person is the legitimate expression of this totally unexplainable happening, expressing itself automatically. So, if you're someone who's apparently in therapy, you are a natural expression of a totally mysterious eventing. Your apparent personal doing is not your personal doing. If you're somebody who's not in therapy, you're one of the natural expressions of this totally unexplainable happening. If you're someone who's interested in non-duality, you're one of the totally natural expressions of existence. If you're someone who's not interested in non-duality, you're one of the natural expressions of existence. this non-dual perspective is simply pointing out that what we think is our personal doing is not our personal doing, that all these stories of a human being ultimately doing something in existence, these are interpretations of something that can't be explained. And even within our interpretations, it's simply the acknowledgement that our basic needs, our interests, our concerns, our focuses aren't our creation. We don't decide to have certain needs, interests, concerns, or focuses. Those are simply the expression of this totally unexplainable happening. And our abilities aren't our creation. The only abilities we apparently have to follow our needs, interests, concerns, focuses, urges, the only abilities that we have to function aren't our creation. So it's just a very simple acknowledgement that what we think of as our personal doing is not our personal doing. And that ultimately every human being is the natural expression of this totally unexplainable dynamic. All right, having said that, let's get down to what it is that's been sent in. A first person has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. Not many questions about this stuff arise anymore, but I noticed that I still have some unfinished business with death. Some months ago, I asked you about this pulsating and swaying energy that is increasing in my experience, and it really seems that this energy is consciousness itself. Or maybe I could call it a basic sense of existing. It's as if some kind of reference point that was imagined inside the body is beginning to loosen up and is starting to sway and move. Actually, it has been doing this for many years now, but it seems to somehow increase or grow. As you know, there are many stories of near-death experiences and astral travel and so on, where people describe experiencing something without a body or outside the body. This really makes me wonder if it is possible that there can be some sense of existing without a functioning body and senses. Do you think that there can be conscious experience, acknowledgement of the moment, or knowing that something is, without an active, alive brain and body?" Let's see. There are a number of ways I could respond to this. I mean, I could say right now there is the acknowledgement that something is and there isn't any brain or body, because ideas about brains and bodies are just interpretations that don't really apply to the totally unexplainable happening of this moment. However, that's not really in line with how this person was actually asking this question. This person is wondering if there can be some sense of the moment, that something is happening in the moment, if there isn't what we apparently call a brain and a body. And I don't have the feeling that there can be some sense of the happening of the moment without a brain or body, because I don't have any memory of anything prior to coming out of the womb. And I don't have any sense of anything happening in deep sleep. And if I don't have any sense of anything happening in deep sleep, I don't think I'm going to be having a sense of anything happening in death, what we would call death. The death of the brain and the death of the body. But more to the point, this person is asking this in relation to his or her concerns about death. And this experience of the moment being, having more of a feeling of being energy, as he or she was saying, Some months ago, I asked you about this pulsating and swaying energy that is increasing in my experience. So this person is having the sense that what they are is this energetic body, and they're relating this to these stories of near-death experiences or experiences of astral travel. Just generally, astral travel would be the notion that awareness leaves the body and goes somewhere else, either to different planes of existence or different parts of the world. And so all of this is arising in a consideration of death and what might be happening at the point of death. So there's very naturally a wondering as to whether or not this energetic body might be this feeling of consciousness, this feeling that something is happening, could still exist without what we usually call the body and the brain. Now, with these near-death experiences and these experiences of astral travel, these are not experiences that occur without a body. They're called near-death experiences. They're not death experiences. And those near-death experiences of, you know, all these general stories of a light arising and the feeling of moving towards light, all of these can be experienced in states of deep relaxation and states of deep meditation, deep concentration. And as well, these stories of astral travel are always told, always described as somehow the awareness moving about outside the body, but in some way it's always still connected to a body and connected to a brain. So often they will have stories of a silver thread that still connects them to the body. And in fact, within those stories of astral travel, they say if that silver thread is severed, you would die. Now, just speaking from my own experience, I mean, I spent 17 years being, within my apparent life journey. Life presented a situation where for about 17 years I was experiencing many of these episodes, many of these general experiences. In deep relaxation and deep concentration, most of the things I've ever heard described as a near-death experience, I've experienced within meditation situations. And some of the things that have been described as astral travel, I've experienced in states of deep concentration. These are not things that everyone will experience. These are not things that anybody can cultivate. Either life presents these kinds of things to you or it doesn't. And ultimately, they're nothing more than strange experiences. However, in none of these descriptions of these things, is it ever a situation that it's occurring without a body or disconnected from a body. Now, in a following email, this person was wanting me to describe in more detail my own experiences of astral travel, but I'm not really interested in describing these things in greater detail. They're nothing more than odd experiences. Ultimately, my own sense of existence is this ordinary moment can't be really explained in any legitimate way, so I'm not going to sit and describe some weird experience that you might call astral travel in any way, because that's not a true description of what's going on here either. If one starts to experience in their so-called spiritual journey, if they start to experience certain things that seem odd, know, maybe one is beginning to acknowledge that the happening of this moment is a vibrant event. It almost, it feels more like energy than anything else. It may be the feeling that we're moving to a more essential description of existence, but there is no essential description of existence. It's always just odd interpretations of something that can't ultimately be described. And these particular experiences of life being energy, or a particularly strong experience of energy in any particular moment, or the movement of energy, or lights arising, or moving toward a light, or in certain situations, in deep concentration, it's possible that it feels like the awareness moves out of the body with the breath, somehow still connected to the breath, and looks back upon the body. These are just some of the many experiences, passing expressions of existence. There's nothing fundamental in any of that that's going to stay. It's always presenting itself in this moving and shifting way. And after 17 years of experiencing these kinds of things on a regular basis, what became more obvious than anything else was that they don't stay. There's nothing there that's more essential. The essential factor of this moment is that it doesn't have a particular form. It's always moving on to some other presentation. If you're feeling good, wait a while, you'll be feeling bad. If you're feeling bad, wait a while, you'll be feeling good. If there's in deep meditation, there's some field of light that arises and it seems as though you're moving into the light, well, wait a while, that's all going to melt away and you're going to be back in your kitchen washing your dishes or dealing with your spouse. And try as you might to explain existence, you're ultimately still left with meaningless sounds pointing to certain forms that don't ultimately exist. So you may want to talk about light arising and have the feeling that that somehow is a more essential expression of existence, but it's not. It's just one of the passing parade of appearances. Again, this is just from this non-dual perspective, this non-dual sensibility, and it's simply offered for your consideration. If you do have an overwhelming interest in the strange experiences that can arise in situations of deep meditation, whatever, if that's your overwhelming interest, then you will move toward those centers, those presentations that will be focusing on those sorts of things. And that's fine. It's just not what's being presented here. After or during all those years of experiencing these odd things, what became more obvious to me was that all of this was presenting itself automatically, and that whatever this moving, shifting, dancing event was, it couldn't ultimately be described. It had no particular form. And everything that occurs, occurs automatically. It's not anybody's personal doing. And within that acknowledgement, everyone is the legitimate expression, the natural expression of this totally unexplainable happening, the happening of this moment. Ultimately, you will have to be, or you will have to move in whatever way you're expressed, and you will be expressed automatically. You will automatically move in whatever way you're going to move in life. your needs, your interests, your concerns, your focuses, your urges, your abilities will automatically present themselves through life, and they will always be moving and shifting and dancing in whatever way they move and shift and dance. All right, another person has written in saying, "Hello, Daryl. I listen regularly to your postings. I found out about you in Conscious TV and find your approach fresh, direct, and fascinating. I just want to comment on how valuable your explorations are for me, and particularly the emphasis that you place on the fact that there are as many expressions as there are individuals expressing this. I see the endless movement clearly and the undeniable lack of control. Is this the awakening? I'm still expecting some sort of shift, something dramatic, but maybe it doesn't have to happen. I don't know." So no, there doesn't have to be some dramatic shift. I mean, often it will, for those who are expressed with a non-dual perspective, at some point it may seem as though there's a dramatic shift in understanding, but for some, it won't be that. It will just be a very simple acknowledgement that life is a totally unexplainable happening, just happening on its own, and that we're simply part of the expression. Now, for some, there may be an experience of the moment as, you know, one could say, the movement of one great ocean. And for others, there isn't any dramatic sense of an oceanic movement of life. It just is the very simple acknowledgement that this moment is happening on its own, and that the entire process that we are is simply automatically presenting itself. It doesn't require anything dramatic. And it doesn't give any particular result. So throughout history, there have been people who aren't necessarily the most pleasant human beings. And there have been people who behave in ways that just doesn't seem to be all that spiritual, and yet they're very clear that life is a totally unexplainable happening. This moment is a totally unexplainable happening, and that the entire process that they are is a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening on its own, moving and shifting and dancing automatically in whatever way it moves and shifts and dances. Now, I pointed this out very quickly in an email to this person, and this person wrote back saying, "Hello again, Daryl. Yes, I see and agree with your description, and that it is something easily observed as you present it. Before hearing you, the one thing I'd come to realize clearly is that I do not cause the events in my life, but I still felt trapped and in much suffering. In the last several months, the search has intensified, and I've been reading and listening to everything that I seem to relate to strongly, and now the sense of entrapment has faded and is turning more into acceptance, and as you put it, an acknowledgement, and there is a greater and greater sense of relaxation and freedom in seeing the movements of life without resistance. This question comes because I also relate to the idea of being this field or awareness where every movement arises. You don't usually talk about that, and I wonder if experiencing this oceanic oneness still needs to be realized, because I can't say that I have experienced it." It's not a matter of being some kind of field or awareness in which every movement arises. It's just a matter of acknowledging that everything is movement. It is shifting and changing. Now that can be acknowledged conceptually, or can be acknowledged, maybe there's more the feeling of certain things being a physical movement, like pulsation in the body or thoughts streaming. Or it can just be an acknowledgement that over time we have the experience that everything in life is changing. So to acknowledge that shifting event of life, it doesn't really require any kind of oceanic oneness. It's also the case that even if we begin to acknowledge this intellectually and we're drawn to this acknowledgement, and that everything in life that we experience seems to back up this acknowledgement, as we grow older, the sense of life just being this event becomes stronger. But it doesn't really have to be some grand oceanic feeling. For some it may be that way, for others not. Now, this person has sent in a third email saying, I just realized that someone can have this recognition that we do not control our lives and still go on feeling separate, frustrated, and in suffering. At least that's been my experience. What I'm noticing now is that for this realization to be liberating, it has to be accompanied by a surrendering, something that lets go of the urge to control the movement. If this realization that we don't control our lives is seen, and there is still the sense that it shouldn't be that, then it's not liberating at all. I saw this years ago, but not in its entirety, and it has not been until recently when I ran into your presentation that it began to sink in. At first it was irritating to hear it, but I couldn't help agreeing. Recently, it's becoming sweeter, and I can feel the joy of not needing to have things turn out in a specific way. I am still wondering about the idea of consciousness or awareness being our true nature. Something about having these concepts and the realization of life moving on its own seems to be disjointed. Can you comment on this? Anyway, this is a thank you, Daryl, for your generosity. I apologize for the succession of emails, but I have no one else to share this with, and it has been pouring out in the last few days. So, yes, it is the case that we can acknowledge the fact that everything we are is simply moving on its own. We can acknowledge that all of life simply presents itself automatically. It's like the moving of the seasons, the movement of the planets, the flowing of a river. It all just happens automatically. And yet there can be a resistance to that. There can be an acknowledgement of it intellectually, the acknowledgement that that's the fact, but something in us is just saying, no, I don't want it to be that, or it can't be that. So at some point, if we really do acknowledge it, there has to be as this person says, there has to be a letting go of the urge to ultimately have life turn out in a specific way. To acknowledge this dance of the greater mysterious event of existence means it's going to present itself in whatever way it's going to present itself, and our life is part of the presentation. We don't ultimately know where it's going, so it's, as Christ used to say, the wind blows wherever it blows. You can't say where it's coming from, and you can't say where it's going to, and it's exactly the same for everything born of spirit. Now, I don't have the sense that consciousness or awareness is our true nature. Consciousness, words like consciousness and awareness, these are simply interpretations of the happening of this moment. And I am saying that there's no way of defining what's happening in this moment. Ultimately, words like consciousness or awareness are simply meaningless sound. When you came out of the womb, you didn't have the idea that you were consciousness or awareness. There was simply the totally unexplainable happening of existence presenting itself. There wasn't even a story that you came out of the womb. There wasn't any storyline. Now, the odd thing is that within everybody's storyline, there's a story that says, when we came out of the womb, there wasn't any storyline. And our whole sense of existence is that somebody taught us to say these words, to bark certain sounds. Somebody taught us to describe life in a certain way, but nobody had any description when they came out of the womb. It was a totally mysterious happening presenting itself. And there's nothing in the event of life that ultimately tells us what this totally mysterious happening is. So we can bark all kinds of sounds, but even those sounds that we're barking, even those words that we're saying or thinking, these are a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening. As it was pointed out in the Ashtavakra Gita, you know, one of the earliest recorded descriptions of a non-dual sensibility, a non-dual perspective. And, you know, within our storylines, that was apparently expressed 2,800 years ago. It says that whatever's happening in this moment, it can't possibly be described in any way whatsoever. It's not consciousness. It's not awareness. It's not duality. It's not non-duality. It's not this, it's not that, and it's not this, and it's not that. Descriptions don't apply. But even if we drop all descriptions, it still feels like something's happening here. Even though there's no possible way of saying anything true about it, there's no possible way of truly describing it. So it's just a simple acknowledgement. There's just this, what we would call the happening of this moment, doing what it does. There's no way of saying what it is. There's no way of saying what we are, the process that we apparently are. There's no way of saying what that actually is. There's no need to say what that actually is. It's just this doing what it does. And whatever it's doing it automatically. All right. Another person has written in saying, hello. It has recently become much clearer to me that my preferences in regards to spiritual teachings and teachers are firstly a phenomenal a phenomenological orientation without too much in the way of opinions, views, and explanations. And secondly, point A only approach, without reference to an imagined point B. I explored various books on the internet, particularly at Non-Duality Press, and all of a sudden realized that I'd been overlooking your books, despite liking quotes from them in Joan Tollefson's books. I had some impression that turned out to be quite off base. It turns out that they make great sense to me, to use your word. What particularly struck me tonight, reading the first chapter of Dismantling the Fantasy, was that language cannot describe the reality of things, given that they are one, in flux, and two, always new. For example, our dog is always considered to be Yoshi, as if he is an ongoing thing that remains Yoshi, the white dog, but in fact, he is in process, or motion, as you put it. The problem is that language is not recognized for what it is and isn't. This seems to be a significant part of what you're describing. Would you agree? And yes, I would agree with that. We don't have to get rid of language. Language is a natural expression of whatever this happening of the moment is. But language can only do certain things and not do certain other things. So, if we learn to use certain words to describe certain aspects of this great mysterious happening that this moment is, those labels can be used in certain situations in a very functional way, but we cannot ask those labels to describe existence in some true fashion, because those labels are always simply a meaningless sound attached to a form that doesn't actually exist because everything is changing or in process, as this person puts it. So, to try to describe existence in some kind of ultimate way by putting a label on a form that doesn't actually exist, it's not true, because there is simply this process that's presenting itself. And the labels are just meaningless sound. They only take on meaning when they get attached to certain apparent forms. All of us have the sense that when we came out of the womb, we didn't have any labels. And all of us have the sense that we were taught to bark these sounds or use these labels by our parents, our educational system, our society. But again, these are just sounds attached to forms that don't actually exist. So on a day-to-day basis, there's a totally mysterious event that I might call thirst, and there's a totally mysterious event that I might call a glass of water. And even if they're not ultimately thirst and a glass of water, in our day-to-day functioning, I can say, "May I please have a glass of water because I'm thirsty?" And even though I don't ultimately know what's actually going on here, those labels seem to be very helpful on a day-to-day basis. So we can acknowledge that they can, those, the world of language, the world of thought is useful to a certain degree, and it can do certain things, but it can't do other things, such as give us a true description of existence. All right, somebody else has written in saying, "Dear Daryl, there is something I'd like to ask you. It's about urges and desires. I don't seem to have any." "Of course, I have the daily ones, but there's nothing pulling me in the world. The people I've had reunions with lately all have plans and dreams and urges to do something or go somewhere, and I have nothing. I'm not depressed. I'm just happy to meander along and see what happens. Yet there's a part of me that's saying this is not normal. I don't even have a creative interest. There's just space. Normal daily pursuits, getting up and getting on with whatever. I don't distance myself from the world, as there's always things to be done, and I don't feel lonely or lost. It's strange and comforting at the same time to not want anything at all. There's a question in there somewhere. Much love." Now, it's very interesting. This email arrived about a day after I had said to a friend of mine that I was feeling kind of odd that I don't have any real urge to do anything in the world. That in my own situation, I'm totally content with a very simple existence. And yet, within the context of the rest of the world, where so many people are rushing off to travel the world to try to, they have very strong interests in certain projects, I seem to be just meandering along, as this person is pointing out, simply dealing with the very basic aspects of life on a day-to-day basis. And it's really a very strong sense of contentment. But the weird thing is, contentment seems strange within the world. It's a very odd thing that to be content with a very simple life, to not have any big drive to some big accomplishment, or to not have any big urge to some special project, but to be very simply content with life, with a very simple life, that actually seems odd. So I've read this out because there isn't any really big question in this. I just found it interesting that this person, she was commenting on just a very basic fact of existence, that contentment at times seems as though it's weird. All right, another person has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. Firstly, I'd like to thank you for your books and for your website. I came across your work a few months ago, and what I read in Dismantling the Fantasy resonated very strongly with me and made a lot of sense. In following what you say, I do acknowledge that what I experience is constantly changing, and although I have witnessed this before, I guess I haven't acknowledged all the implications. I work as a mental health nurse, seeing people who experience what is referred to as mild to moderate mental health problems. I suppose I may be referred to as an eclectic therapist, using techniques and approaches from a number of different so-called therapies. Over the last couple of years, I've been using more of a particular therapy, which has fitted better with my personal philosophy or view on life, although I admit that I do have some reservations with some of it. Having read Dismantling the Fantasy and listened to a number of your audio recordings, I was rereading one of the textbooks and manuals from this therapy the other week and came across this section." And he gives a quote. "Human beings dwell in two different worlds. At birth, we dwell only in the world of direct experience, the world as we know it directly through the five senses. But as we grow older, we learn to think. And as that ability grows, we start to spend more and more time in a second world, the world of language. This seems to fit very well with what you've been saying. Please correct me if I'm wrong here. In this therapy, there is quite a bit of emphasis on mindfulness exercises and experiencing the here and now, and not getting caught up in thoughts, but allowing them to come and go. However, on the previous page within this textbook that he was reading, he found this other quote, and he's included that. And the quote is, in the midst of tremendous pain and suffering, there is an opportunity to find meaning and purpose and vitality. So he goes on to say that this quote jumped out at me and irritated me, and it was almost as though I wanted to shout, no, this, and again, please correct me if I'm wrong, seem to go against what you've been saying, i.e. that if people are finding meaning and purpose, they are essentially making up stories about their lives, forms which are essentially formless. There seems to be a lot of focus on goals, and for the past several years, I have personally been doubting the usefulness of setting goals. Since reading your work and listening to yours and others talk on non-duality, I seem to be struggling more with my place in my work with clients, because if I follow the therapies, this seems to be going against my non-dual leanings, and by encouraging people to focus on goals, etc., it's almost as if I'm shortchanging them. Some research has shown that it's not the therapy that counts, but the therapist, so maybe the best thing to do is just to be with clients. I wonder, do you have any comments about the issue of meaning and purpose mentioned or about anything else above? And I have one other question. I have often struggled with phrases such as, he's got depression, she's manic depressive. I've had anxiety for years. It sounds as though people have had these things inside them all the time, or even are these things. Many of us in the field question the usefulness of diagnosis. But from a non-dual sensitivity, do so-called conditions such as depression exist? I guess not, but I'd value your comment. It's been quite hard writing all this down, because as I use words and try to find the right word to convey an idea or point of view, it just all seems so much piffle and nonsense. Even to use the word I confuses things. Many thanks, Daryl. Take care. Best wishes. All right, so, okay, a number of things. Let's deal with this first quote that he quoted from his textbook on this therapy. Human beings dwell in two different worlds. At birth, we dwell only in the world of direct experience, the world as we know it directly through the five senses. But as we grow older, we learn to think, and as that ability grows, we start to spend more and more time in a second world, the world of language. So he says that quotation seems to fit very well with what I say, and he asks if I would correct him if he's wrong in that assumption. So, yes, it sounds very close to what I'm saying, but actually what I'm saying goes cuts through a bit more here. This is saying that at birth we dwell in the world as we know it through the five senses, but that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that at birth there's no interpretation of existence. So the birth that we all seem to remember, the birth that we describe, you know, we all have the impression that we came out of the womb at some point. But we also have the sense that when we came out of the womb, we didn't have any words for existence. So it wasn't a situation of us experiencing life through the five senses. That's also part of the storyline that we get. So basically, from this non-dual perspective, it ultimately ends up saying that there is basically a happening that can't be interpreted in any way whatsoever. Now, the whole story of us coming out of the womb and not having a storyline, it doesn't mean that we actually came out of the womb, because basically there was a happening that didn't even have the description of a me coming out of the womb. So what this is ultimately saying is that there's the happening of this moment. There's no way to actually say what it is. However, apparent descriptions arise, and the focus goes on those descriptions as being some kind of reality. So, yes, there is more and more a focus on this world of language, world of thought, and this world of interpretation. So that is in alignment with what I'm saying, basically. And he goes on to describe how in the therapy that he offers, there's quite a bit of emphasis on mindfulness exercises and experiencing the here and now and not getting caught up in thoughts, but allowing them to come and go. So that's great. For anyone who's interested in that kind of exploration, that's a great exploration. Now, he has trouble with another quotation that he discovered, which goes on to say that in the midst of tremendous pain and suffering, there's an opportunity to find meaning and purpose and vitality through these mindfulness practices. And he's finding that difficult because it seems to be saying or he's assuming that to find meaning and purpose would be making up stories about our lives. And actually, that's not quite, I mean, that may be what somebody's looking for. Somebody might be looking for some intellectual meaning to life, but it's also the possibility in acknowledging the happening of the moment and acknowledging the process that we apparently are, it's also the possibility of acknowledging that we are inclined to certain apparent things. So we have a certain love of something, and that gives our life meaning. Certain things are important to us, and that is, in a way, we could say, the meaning to our life, but it's not an intellectual meaning. It's not a conceptual meaning. So to make this more practical, we could perhaps have the experience of apparently seeing a rainbow. Again, we don't really know what any of this actually is, but there's a situation where there's the beauty of a rainbow. Now, that just very naturally is beautiful. It has some kind of meaning that isn't intellectual. It's pleasant. And it's mysterious in some way. It's magical in some way. Even without the movement of the intellect. So again, in acknowledging the process that we are, that process will exhibit certain inclinations. There are certain things that are meaningful to us. There are certain things that we love, we appreciate. And that, as you know, we could say in a way that that adds meaning to our life, but that's not necessarily, or that isn't fundamentally, an intellectual description of existence. It's not an intellectual meaning. It's just that this totally mysterious expression that we are is automatically expressed in a certain way with certain inclinations. And on a day-to-day basis, certain things are simply very important to our life. Certain interests are very important to us, and these are all simply the expression of this greater mysterious dance of existence. Now, he has another point here. He's saying he's having difficulty with some of these therapies because there's a lot of focus on goals, on establishing goals for certain individuals. And this person has been doubting the usefulness of setting these goals, especially in considering this non-dual perspective. And this is a point that I've discussed often with certain friends of mine, friends that are functioning within a therapeutic area, dealing with psychology and psychiatry, because ultimately a non-dual perspective is saying that there isn't any one correct human being, that everyone is the correct human being, that within the world of apparent form, every apparent form is unique, it's different. And so from that perspective, every human being is different. So to set certain specific goals and say that's the correct goal for all human beings, that doesn't make any sense. For instance, there are many therapies that have an idea of what a healthy human being is, but all they're doing is describing certain human beings and saying, we want everybody to be that kind of human being, which is impossible. Not everybody can be that kind of human being. Every human being is unique. Every human being is different to some degree from every other apparent human being, and that's their natural expression. Some more recent therapies have made the assumption that a meditative mind state is the optimum mind state for all human beings, which again is incorrect. Only certain people are inclined to a meditative mind state. It doesn't mean that all the other human beings in existence are wrong. So there are certain therapies that approach individuals who are interested in exploring their lives in a way that they simply support that person in acknowledging the next important thing to them. And so the therapy itself becomes a process of this particular person, a particular apparent person, unfolding in whatever way they need to unfold. And that kind of approach would be more in line with this non-dual acknowledgement. Now, this last point that this person is making, he's saying he's often struggled with phrases such as he's got depression or she's manic depressive or I've had anxiety for years. And he's wondering if from a non-dual sensibility, do so-called conditions such as depression exist? So ultimately, no. From the non-dual perspective, there's just a totally unexplainable happening presenting itself in whatever way it presents itself. However, one of the natural ways it expresses itself is that it gives rise to words like depression and anxiety, and it gives rise to apparent descriptions of existence. Although ultimately we don't even know what those descriptions are. We've just been told to call them descriptions. Again, this movement, the moving, shifting event of thought and description in life is also a totally unexplainable happening, expressing itself, moving automatically, like the changing of the seasons, like the flowing of a river. So, yes, in a way, it's to try to focus on these descriptions and a diagnosis of a certain situation. I mean, ultimately, that's not quite true. But this doesn't ultimately mean that thought is necessarily the enemy. It means that we might have to consider more carefully what thought can be used for, how it can be used in some kind of healthy way, and not get too fixated on these descriptions. Again, even the consideration of the use of thought and what seems to be the healthy use of thought and the unhealthy use of thought, that's going to be unique with each individual. So to declare that somebody's depressed or somebody's manic depressive, from moment to moment, everybody's particular process is moving and shifting and changing. So depression isn't one thing. Depression is a general term, but from moment to moment, a so-called state of depression is changing. And it's the same with labeling someone manic depressive. So they may be in a manic state, they may be in a depressive state, but even those manic states and depressive states, from moment to moment during the day, they're moving and shifting and changing. It's also the case that depression and bipolar conditions, these can actually alleviate. So that someone might be diagnosed as being bipolar or manic depressive at some point in their life, and actually that situation can evaporate in certain situations over a lifetime. And it's the same thing with depression. Each and every case is unique. So again, to be able to use thought in a way that's somewhat constructive, somewhat practical, but not get too caught up in these labels, because the labels tend to ignore the moving, shifting, dancing event that we are. And a particular label can't really capture the moving, shifting, dancing event that each of us actually is. So, as I said earlier, I have a number of friends working within psychology and psychiatry, and these are things that they're considering all the time in their approach to human beings. I mean, even this whole relationship of a therapist and a client, that automatically sets up some strange situation. You know, it has the feeling that the therapist knows something that this other person doesn't, and that the therapist is somehow going to make this other person a correct human being. I mean, that in itself has all kinds of strange qualities to it. So to work with all of this in some kind of way that ultimately does feel healthy is a very sensitive dance. All right, another person wrote in to say that he had run across somebody else's presentation of non-duality, and he felt that it really had uncovered a lot of assumptions, that it had clarified a number of things about non-duality, and he asked for my comment on that. So he listed some of the things that it had clarified. And so here are a number of the things that he felt it had clarified in this non-dual sensibility. So first, life is not in a plant or a body or on a planet labeled Earth. The apparent movement of this ocean of existence is still finite or in apparent time. Existence is another name for the never-changing absolute reality or infinity. The infinity that is what I am is not in time and is not subject to movement of any kind. In fact, time never even began in infinity. Consciousness or awareness or being knows nothing of time and is only ever present, with no history of any event even occurring. Time does not coexist with the timeless. Truth or reality is the only presence that there is. The illusion of this being a movement of any kind would not be presence or real. The relative cannot be real. And in truth, so-called relative existence did not even happen. So I wrote back to say that from my sense of it, none of these statements clarify anything about a non-dual sensibility, because all of these statements are a focus on thought, on a focus on description. It's the assertion that there is something called life that is not in a plant or a body or on a planet labeled Earth. It's the assertion that there is some kind of absolute reality. It's the assertion that there's something called consciousness or awareness or being that knows nothing of time and is only ever present. However, if whatever this is knows nothing of time, it can't actually be ever present, because to think in terms of the present is to think in terms of time. Truth or reality is the only presence there is. Well, actually there is no truth or reality. That's just a meaningless sound attempting to describe the happening of this, what seems to be the happening of this moment. But the happening of this moment, whatever this is, it can't, there is, we don't have a tool for describing it. Anyway, just in general, the focus on all this thought is not fundamentally a non-dual sensibility. So it's not clarifying anything about a non-dual sensibility. A non-dual sensibility is saying that ultimately descriptions don't apply to what's happening, what seems to be happening here in this moment. Even to say that there's a happening in this moment, that doesn't really apply. There's no way of saying anything about what is. Even the notion of isness is ridiculous. Nobody has an experience of anything that is. Whatever seems to be is moving on to something else. So the sense of isness or ongoing being doesn't even apply. So from a non-dual perspective, the acknowledgement of what's happening in our life, in our apparent life, and the acknowledgement of what's happening in this apparent moment is ultimately that there's no way of saying anything about it, about what it actually is. So, and as certain philosophies have pointed out, you're saying that it's not this and it's not that. And you're also saying that it's not not this, and it's not not that. That the focus on these ideas is a constant focus on trying to explain existence when there's no way of saying what this is. So to make this more specific, this statement that time does not coexist with the timeless is not true, because time has to coexist with timeless, because they're just ideas about existence. You can't think in terms of the timeless without thinking in terms of time. Timelessness, to talk about timelessness is to be thinking about time. Even the word timeless has got the word time in it. It has no meaning if you're not thinking in terms of time. A non-dual sensibility is pointing out that both the word time and the word timeless are an attempt to describe what's happening here, and there's no way of saying what's happening. No true way of saying what's happening. There's no true way of describing whatever this is. So it's not that time is a relative view and timelessness isn't. They're both relative views. It's not that truth, it's not that there's some thing called truth or reality, because words like truth and reality are just relative viewpoints. From a non-dual perspective, these viewpoints may be useful in certain situations, but they don't clarify anything about what's actually apparently happening here in this moment. Thought cannot clarify anything about what's happening here, because descriptions don't apply. There is no tool for accurately saying what this is. And to try to say what it is not is simply to focus on the world of thought, the world of description. And to deny that world of description, but you end up denying it by focusing on more thought. This non-dual sensibility is an acknowledgement that thought can't really be saying anything accurate about whatever this happening of this apparent moment is. However, on a day-to-day basis, apparent thoughts arise, and thought seems to be useful in certain situations. Whether or not it's actually even useful is a moot point. All of this is a happening that simply presents itself in the way it presents itself. An apparent thought is one of the presentations. Okay, so moving on here, another person has written in saying, "Dear Daryl, lately I've been selling or donating many of the spiritual type books I've collected over the years. As I sort and leaf through them, I sometimes come across passages or phrases that were baffling to me but now make sense, as well as a whole lot of stuff that is clearly excess verbiage, and then tons of stuff that's just plain nonsense. But there remain a few things that I'm still curious about. Last week, I saw the term the deathless in a Theravada text. It always sounded like something from Lord of the Rings to me. Very dramatic and magical, and it still does. Maybe it's just because I can't get around the theatricality of the term, but it still doesn't make a lot of sense to me, or at least it seems like a stretch to use that kind of language. Can you share anything you know about this term and the tradition of its usage? Also, can you share whether or how you personally relate to this term, and or why someone might employ that term to describe a non-dual sensibility? Best wishes for the new year to you. Thanks." Okay, within the Theravada Buddhist tradition, I can't really think of a specific use of this word deathless, but I know it was used as another word for nibbana. You know, what most people know as nirvana. The Buddha actually used the word nibbana, which is the Pali word. He didn't use the Sanskrit word nirvana. So he used the word deathless as another word for nibbana. But ultimately he said that descriptions don't apply to life. So it is a very melodramatic term. I know that when I was a Buddhist monk, the monk that I trained under, Ajahn Sumedho, he enjoyed this term because it was so melodramatic. So often, non-dual presenters will say very dramatic things in an attempt to really make a point, to maybe cause people to sit back and consider some of these things a little more. But I don't relate to the word deathless. I don't relate ultimately to any description of existence. I have all the usual descriptions of existence that most people have, and they seem to be very useful in getting through my day, but I don't have the sense that they relate to what's actually going on here at all. They're just part of life's mysterious expression. No description accurately describes what's happening here. From my sensibility, there's no way of saying what's apparently happening in this moment, not in any true fashion. However, I know that certain people who have a non-dual sensibility, some people still enjoy these very melodramatic terms and melodramatic statements. Each apparent person is a unique expression, and some apparent people are very theatrical. Okay, and the last person has written in saying, "Hi Daryl, I love your monthly answers, and when I listen to them, they make sense. But when I think about your logic, it makes less sense. you start off with forms that change and end up with no forms, just the unformed. If you contradict the original assumption of forms, how can the conclusion be true? And if there is nothing but unformed, how can the assumption of forms work so well in everyday life? So, as I've said on and off through my presentations and in my books, my descriptions of existence aren't the fact either. And in fact, in Dismantling the Fantasy, I point out that everything I'm saying in that book is false as well. It's a fantasy, but ultimately it's a fantasy that will dismantle itself. So when I'm entering the world of thought and I'm pointing out the contradictions that exist in thought, when I point to the fact that our basic impression of existence is that everything is changing, I'm not ultimately wanting to end up focusing on some description of existence. So a non-dual perspective is not ultimately going to end up focusing on some description of existence as the one true description of existence. A non-dual sensibility looks at the world of description and looks at all the contradictions and conflicts within that world of description to come to realize that the world of thought doesn't really apply to what's happening here, to what seems to be happening here. So that even though thought seems to be useful on a day-to-day basis, when it comes to ultimately coming to describe existence in some way, either in a positive way or a negative way, it doesn't work. It's not a tool for saying something about existence. That, you know, as the Buddha would say, descriptions ultimately don't apply. As Ashtavakra in the Ashtavakra Gita pointed out, how can you possibly say anything about this? So from a non-dual perspective, the point isn't to arrive at some description of existence that's better than any other description. The point is to acknowledge the apparent happening of this moment and realize that there's no way of defining it. There is no tool for defining existence. So ultimately, from a non-dual perspective, to consider the world of description in relation to what we feel is our basic experience of life, it simply comes to realize that those descriptions, the limitations of thought, leave us without any tool for saying anything absolutely true about existence. So ultimately, there's just what seems to be the happening of this moment just presenting itself. There's no way of saying what it is. Now, this person also goes on to ask, if there is nothing but the unformed, how can the assumption of forms work so well in everyday life? And this is our mistaken assumption. Most people feel that the assumption of form works really well in daily life. However, it has a small side effect to it, which is that we're left endlessly trying to hang on to certain forms, ultimately feeling dissatisfied with certain forms, ultimately feeling frustrated with certain forms because they keep moving and shifting and changing on us. And with this assumption of form, we ultimately, most people, end up focused on descriptions of life, constantly frustrated by the fact that their constant urge to find some true understanding of existence just doesn't seem to leave any true understanding of existence. And all of that because this focus on form seems to be working so well but ultimately it doesn't. And that brings us to the end of what's been sent in this month. Again, whatever I've offered here is just for your consideration. If you relate to it, that's great. If you don't relate to it, that's great. Let's go out with a bang here, since this is the last response to things sent in 2013. Let's go out with a bang and not a whimper. A non-dual perspective, a non-dual sense of existence, is saying that what we call human activity is not human activity. It's actually a happening that can't possibly be interpreted or described in any way whatsoever. And what we call our personal doing is not our personal doing. We don't create ourselves, so we don't create anything else in existence. We don't create our needs, our interests, our concerns, our focuses, our urges. We don't create any of those motivating factors, and we don't create any of our abilities to respond to those motivating factors, to apparently respond to those motivating factors. So even within our storylines, we're ultimately not influencing the movement of existence. But that doesn't mean that you're going to sit around doing nothing. It means you're going to be expressed in whatever way you're expressed. It means if you find therapy to be an important thing, then you'll get involved with therapy. It means if you find a non-dual sensibility to be an important thing, you will get involved with a non-dual perspective, a non-dual sensibility. All of it is simply the expression of something we can't explain. Every apparent expression of existence is the natural expression of a totally unexplainable happening, the happening of this moment. Humankind isn't choosing its orientations and abilities, its focuses or its responses. These are the action of something indefinable. We are ultimately a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening automatically. Or no, let me rephrase that. We are ultimately an unexplainable happening, just the apparent happening of this moment. Simply happening. To say this is not to, it's not meant to leave you sitting around feeling badly about your life. It's not meant to have you sit around thinking, oh, I have no control, I can't do anything. What it's saying is you will be presented with a certain sensibility within this world of apparent form. You will be presented with a certain sensibility, and that's what you will follow. When we think that we're the center of the universe, when we think that we're in charge, we never actually appreciate the fact that all of it is a gift. Instead, we're focusing on the things that we don't feel are perfect. We're focusing on those moments that just don't feel quite so pleasant. And if we only could figure out how to make this perfect all the time, then we would be happy. When we realize that none of it is ultimately our expression, none of it is ultimately our doing, our personal doing, that all of it is a totally unexplainable, mysterious dance, presenting itself and we're part of the presentation, then maybe we can come to appreciate some of the wonderful things that it does offer and come to understand that it's ultimately not going to be never-ending pleasure, and that we will have to, in some way, whatever way makes sense to us, endure those moments that aren't so great, or those periods of time that are not so great. If you're apparently drawn to explore your life in any number of ways, through therapy or through meditative traditions, meditative practices, or just through the school of hard knocks, that's wonderful. But none of those things is going to lead to a never-ending pleasure. Maybe, in the midst of that apparent life journey, it may become obvious that there is no way of saying what any of this is, that human beings are not causing it or influencing it in any way, that human beings, what we call human beings, are also simply a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening the way they happen. There may be the arising of this non-dual sensibility, what's known as a non-dual sensibility, or not. It's not the one true sense of existence. It's just one of the mysterious expressions of existence. Ultimately, this non-dual sensibility is saying every expression of existence is the natural, legitimate, and true expression of existence. In any particular moment, whatever is happening, this is it. This is the Great Spirit. This is the unformed ocean of existence. This is Buddha mind or Buddha nature. It is everything we see right now. Everything that can be acknowledged right now. This is it. And this is its true and natural expression. And whatever it seems to be now is already gone. It's shifting on to something else. With that, I wish you only good things for the coming month. However, I know it's going to be a mixed bag of things. Take care. Bye.